Support for NPR podcasts comes from Bose, offering Bose in-ear headphones designed for comfort and quality sound and featuring soft silicone tips in three sizes at bose.com/radio.
Coming up right now is NPR's J.J. Sutherland with a character that has influenced all of us and with the story that best begins with a question. What's up, Doc?
Start talking. It's your nickel.
Who?
This Associated Press. The public has been demanding my life story. Well, I can tell it to you right over the phone.
Bugs Bunny is one of the most popular, most enduring, and most recognizable characters in the world. His trademark smirk and ever-present carrot were born in the late 1930s, exploded into fame during World War II, and became an indelible part of American culture ever after. Bugs is an aspirational character, the person with a comeback to every situation, the coolest kid in the class. Robert Thompson, let's call him Bob, is the director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. He says Bugs was a departure from rabbits like Peter Cottontail.
Bugs Bunny was a very different kind of bunny. He was a wise guy. He was aggressively defiant, and that was very appealing. At the same time, there was something actually a little bit threatening about Bugs Bunny because he did always win. He was such a wise guy.
It's true, Doc. I'm a rabbit, all right. Would you like to shoot me now or wait till you get home? Shoot him now! Shoot him now! You keep out of this. He doesn't have to shoot you now.
He does so have to shoot me now. I demand that you shoot me now.
After the smoke clears and Daffy puts his bill back on, he realizes how Bugs took him in. Pronoun trouble. Billy West is one of the current voices of Bugs Bunny.
He is charming. He's very, very smart, you know. I mean, he can quote Shakespeare, and then he'd tell you where a barroom in Brooklyn was, you know.
Oh, it's down on Toity Toy, Doc.
He's pointing out the contradictions inherent in Bugs Bunny. He's nice, but a bit of a bully. Appealing and scary. High culture and low. He morphs from one to the other seamlessly. In Bugs, they aren't antithetical. That very mercurialness is what makes Bugs, Bugs. An example. In one short, Water, Water, Every Hair, Bugs is being chased through an evil scientist's castle. At one point, Bugs is trapped between a pit of man or rabbit-eating alligators and a humongous monster who seems to be made solely of a mass of orange hair.
Uh-oh. Think fast, rabbit.
My stars! Where did you ever get that awful hairdo? It doesn't become you at all. Here, for goodness sakes, let me fix it up.
His transformation into a hairdresser is complete, instantaneous, and of course totally takes in his adversary, with predictable results.
But I'll be back before you're done.
Bob Thompson, the professor, says Bugs is a uniquely American expression of an ancient archetype, the trickster.
If you want to teach a course in Folklore 101 and you need an example for a trickster, Bugs Bunny is a perfect example of it. He defies authority, he goes against the rules, but he does it in a way that's often lovable and that often results in good things for the culture at large.
Perhaps this is best demonstrated by Bugs Bunny's emblematic adoption in World War II. The representative of the culture, the epitome of the American character, was used in propaganda, painted on bombers, and sewn on paratroopers' patches. Bugs' rule-breaking was helping win the war. Puck in A Midsummer Night's Dream is also a trickster, as is Coyote in Native American mythology, Anansi in West African stories, or the Monkey King in Chinese culture. They are all characters who defy every convention of their society, heck, of reality itself.
I know this defies the law of gravity, but, you see, I never studied law.
Bugs' defiance of everything, his refusal to be bound by any rules, extended to his, well, extensive cross-dressing.
Which was just strange, but I loved it when he would just dress up like to hide out from somebody like Elmer Fudd. Oh, I wonder where the wabbit went.
I'm over here, Doc.
Mwah! You know, and he'd plant one on Elmer Fudd's head, and I never thought there was anything weird about it. I just thought it was like, this guy will do anything.
That was Billy West again, the voice guy.
Oh, where do I get that wabbit?
What would you want with a rabbit? Can't you see that I'm much sweeter? I'm your little senorita.
I'm not so sure, though, that he was getting sexual stimulation about dressing as a woman as he was getting sexual stimulation because dressing as a woman was making other people crazy.
And that is perhaps why Bugs Bunny lasts. He doesn't seem like a character of the 40s. He seems like a character of today. His wisecracking, his gender bending, his rule breaking broke ground long before punk rock or David Bowie or Jerry Seinfeld. He is impossible to pin down in any specific sense. In a way, the only way to describe Bugs Bunny is to simply show one of his cartoons, point at the rascally rabbit and say him in toto, not in parts. From high opera to bullfights, from Shakespeare to Brooklyn, from man to woman, he is all of those and yet none.
Who is responsible for this? I demand that you show yourself! Who are you?
J.J. Sutherland, NPR News.
Am I a stinker?
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Andrea Seabrook.
Toga, 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 toga.
The movie Animal House is, of course, the stereotype of the college fraternity. Binge drinking, hazing, partying. But some fraternities are trying to change that frat boy culture. NPR's Khana Jaffe Walt explains.
How do you bond with a frat guy? Ask them about their latest, wildest, hottest party. It's what I asked freshman and new Sigma Phi Epsilon recruit Lin Chen at Georgetown University in D.C. So, togas? Oh, no, wait, I know. Beer bong beach theme.
Yeah, Paul got like 20-something pumpkins. And
pumpkin smashing, all right.
Some tarps and we started carving. Yeah, music, hot cider, get the real family feel together. So
wholesome pumpkin carving? Okay, but you guys have done something crazy recently. What about the ladies? Fraternity president Paul Happel says he and his brothers, they're not about random drunken hookups. They're trying to do something different.
There's sort of this thing at Georgetown, this sort of unspoken rule that you don't exactly take girls out on dates. And I think it's interesting that SIGEP really takes great pains to improve the culture of dating at the school. And they do that through having different sorts of events off of campus and the Christmas tree lights.
Events like ice skating, formals, or taking the lady to the opera. Sigma Phi Epsilon has taken on a new agenda. It goes by the name of Balanced Man. The principals? Scholar, leader, athlete, and gentleman. There's lots of talk about being gentlemen. And they've thrown out the defining first step of fraternity membership, pledging. That means freshmen like Lin Chen don't have to scrape out the pumpkin seeds or do unspeakable things with them. Lin says if there was hazing and endless keggers, he never would have joined.
I came to Georgetown, I'm paying $50,000 a year. I kind of want to accomplish something outside of, you know, having a good story to tell my grandkids about what not to do in college.
SIGEP isn't the only one flying classy frat guy style. According to the North American Interfraternity Conference, half of its 350,000 undergraduates are in these reimagining the frat type programs. The programs, with names like Men of Principle and the True Brother Initiative, prop up civility, scholarship, and virtue. But the truth is, they weren't exactly born out of some sort of lofty ideal. Matt Antel is director of member development for SIGEP, and he remembers the rowdy 80s and the 90s and a lot of the 2000s, too.
We had a lot of risk management issues.
That's frat code for lawsuits when drunk kids throw themselves off buildings.
From hazing to alcohol abuse and declining academics and grades.
So basically, frat boy culture has spawned so many disasters on college campuses that chapters kept getting shut down. Now people like Mike Hayes, director of fraternities at the University of Maryland, are hesitantly allowing some chapters to reopen, if they are balanced men. Hayes says universities have been pushing fraternities to be focused on honor and scholarship for years now. But finally, the fraternity's headquarters are on board. And he says for the kids who want to be animals, who aren't into the wine tastings, the group study sessions.
Here's the blunt answer. I don't think they're going to have a choice. The headquarters and the universities are now in sync, and so the undergraduates won't have a choice. I think it's one of the first times in my 20 years where I've seen something that I believe will stick.
So we're going to do our modified half series.
I leave the gentlemen over at Georgetown to stop in on their brothers at George Washington University's SIGEP chapter. They're on the basement floor, concentrating on their breath.
So the point here is, like, you're going to try to pretend that you're in between two panes of glass, so everything's stacked on top of each other.
Yeah, that's right. These frat boys are doing yoga. They're sweaty, red-faced, very earnest, and incredibly inflexible. The downward dog, the talk about manly virtue, it's all almost too much. These guys are in college. Where's the fun? Khana Jaffe-Walt, NPR News, Washington.
Late-night comedy shows return to the airwaves this week, despite the continuing strike by the Writers Guild of America. David Letterman negotiated his own deal with the union. That allowed him to return with his writers, and the strike became the topic of their top 10 list.
I don't have a joke. I just want to remind everyone that we're on strike, so none of us are responsible for this lame list.
Other hosts, including Jay Leno, Jimmy Kimmel, Conan O'Brien, came back without their writers. Peter Carlin is TV columnist for the Oregonian newspaper in Portland. Thanks so much for being with us, Mr. Carlin.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
I'm intrigued by the fact that at least the overnight ratings show that more people watched Jay Leno.
Well, I think there may have been a lot of curiosity about how Jay and Conan were actually going to function on the air, you know, without their writers. Mm-hmm. And everybody knew that Dave coming back was just going to have business as usual, whereas theoretically, at least, Leno and Conan O'Brien were going to be making it up as they went along. And Jay has kind of a larger fan base than Dave. But the key thing that's going to change in the next few weeks is that the union is actually encouraging people, actors and other Hollywood union people, to take bookings on The Letterman Show and The Craig Ferguson Show, whereas they consider the NBC shows and Jimmy Kimmel's show on ABC to be, you know, strike breakers.
How have the formats changed, or how are they going to have to change? Because presumably, if the shows without writers are going to have to be more interview-based and the union is playing hardball, it'll be more difficult than ever to book big-name guests who might be reluctant to cross a picket line.
Yeah, so what ends up happening is that you have to become more creative in who you're booking and, you know, exactly how you fill up your time. And that's where Conan O'Brien, I think, has really come to the fore in the last couple of days. I've been impressed that his show has been hysterically funny because he's going around essentially making things up as he goes along, mm-hmm. you know, going up to his office with his video camera and just sort of showing off his toys on his shelves or climbing up onto the catwalks above the stage to see what's up there. So it's this kind of rainy day at home alone and, you know, the cat in the hat shows up type of environment.
Monday night, Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert return with their shows without their writers. Now, these are writer-based shows. They have interviews, but no doubt about it, the shows are based on scripts. What do these guys do? How do they hold an audience?
A couple complicated questions. The first obvious one, of course, is how are they going to fill their time? And I think you'll see a lot less of Jon Stewart sitting at his desk doing routines like he's been doing for the last few years. The interesting question with Colbert is the fact that the union essentially is forbidding these guys from performing as characters. And the Stephen Colbert that you see on the Colbert mm-hmm. Report isn't really Stephen Colbert. It's this sort of fictional alter ego yeah. character. So just by appearing on his show, it seems that Colbert is breaking the union rules.
One of the things that made those shows succeed in the market niche is that they weren't doing what Letterman, Leno, and for that matter Conan O'Brien were doing, but something that was distinctly topical. If what they have to do is the same kind of stuff that, say, Conan O'Brien is doing, then they all begin to resemble each other.
Yeah, and you know, and that's obviously the curveball that's been thrown to them, that they have to reimagine themselves on the fly. Guys like Conan O'Brien and I suspect Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert may secretly enjoy and rise to the challenge because they're those kind of odd people who are just engineered to perform and to be funny, and I think it probably it, you know, on some level makes them feel the most, you know, like mountain climbers who really only are happy when they're above 8,000 meters, you know, in the death zone, as they call it. For my money, you know, I mean, I think it's great when the TV world, which is always so formulaic and so predictable, veers completely out of control. I mean, it's breathtaking TV.
Peter Carlin, TV columnist for The Oregonian in Portland, thanks so much.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Good morning. I'm Steve Inskeep. Michigan's Lake Superior State University offered a list of overused words and phrases. According to the list, surge has been used more than enough. Perfect storm should be history along with webinar or online seminar. Post 9/11 should be banned. And then there's blank is the new blank, like chocolate is the new sex. For example, in this post 9/11 world, a perfect storm of webinars shows that surge is the new light at the end of the tunnel. It's Morning Edition.